You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable! ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable! Wrestling is awesome! If I tear his bone on the ropes, rallying up the ladder, stop the damn match!
1, 2, 3!
ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable! ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable! ESO!
Oh, hell yeah!
Hey, cats and kittens, it's time once again for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. And as always, I'm your host, John Morgan Neal, the guy over there twisting all the knobs and pulling all the levers and doing all that stuff that I don't know anything about. Make sure that we actually can talk to you is Richard Yule. Our old pal, Jonathan Williams, our third head of the Monster, is not going to be with us tonight because of previous engagements and hard work. But tonight is our indie extravaganza, our independent wrestling extravaganza. We're going to interview three different people from three different phases of the independent scene, starting off with our old pal, Isaac Kane, who runs the KFW Wrestling. Over there is a booker and promoter and wrestler, and has lots of history in the business and knows whereof he speaks. Then we will be talking to Atlanta Stalwart, almost 10 years worth of wrestling history there, in the one and only Tyson Dean, a several time champion there in the Georgia area, who also runs a wrestling school along with Luke Gallows, that is bringing forth new independent wrestlers. And finally, we are going to talk to the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, who is now the who's made history in a couple of ways. He's the oldest one to ever become champion, and he is going to be the first champion under this new regime under Billy Corgan, which promises some big things. So if you haven't heard of Tim Storm yet, you're probably going to before 2018 is over with. So anyway, that's it. We're going to talk to these guys, and we're going to shut up and just ask a few questions because they're the ones that know the story, and we hope that you can listen and chime in, let us know what you think, and maybe you learn something too.
Hello, podcast fans. My name is Chris Jones, and I'm here to tell you about the Nerd Bliss podcast. Now, of all the geek-oriented podcasts out there, we are definitely one of them. Yes, we talk about Star Trek and Star Wars and cosplay and Marvel and DC and the usual. But as geeks, we embrace anyone with very specialized knowledge, like triathletes or improv comedians or musicians. So we try to bring them in and let them share their geekiness with you to help broaden some horizons, and maybe you'll learn something. Maybe we'll learn something. You can find our entire catalog at nerdblisspodcast.com on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play Music, Player FM, and we are now proud to be a part of the ESO Network. Once again, we are the Nerd Bliss Podcast. Thank you, and pod bless.
Hey, cats and kittens, this is your host, John Morgan Neal, and as always, my Robin to my Batman, or my, sidekick, Tonto, yeah. So anyway, Richard Yule, who makes sure that all the bells and whistles and all the switches and knobs are taken care of, and for our indie interview extravaganza, we're going to talk to a man who's been doing it in the trenches for quite a while now, running his KFW wrestling there in Tennessee. He knows the ins and outs of the business, no doubt about it, knows all that needs to be spoken about of the indie scene. So we're going to talk to him right now. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Isaac.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on here. I've been a guest on the podcast a few times, and I always enjoy coming
old
back.
Old friend, yes.
Yeah. Thanks, Isaac. You have been on the podcast many times, actually, and we always enjoy having you on. And so we wanted to bring on a promoter, kind of. I mean, that's what you are a wrestler as well, but you put on these KFW shows once, sometimes twice a month, and you've been doing that for how many years?
My brother and I are going on 13 years. Wow. So. you know, it, my brother started off being the promoter. He still is one of the promoters. Now we do it together. I started out as just a talent, just a local talent. And I kind of weaved my way into helping him with the promoting side of it. And I've been doing the promoting side of it for a while now. So I've kind of been side by side with my brother. He's the one who started at Tommy Henry. So
I gotcha. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's part of the, I mean, he's basically a manager now, right?
Yeah, yeah. He helps with promoting and booking, and I do the same thing. And he's a talent as well, kind of a mouthpiece.
Oh yeah, he's
and
great.
Then I as a mouthpiece and a talent as well. So yeah.
So I'm sure you have hundreds of stories of, you know, running an indie show is not easy work. I've never done it, but I can imagine it would be awful to try to wrangle. I know how it is to wrangle people for podcasts. I can't imagine how it is to wrangle people for wrestling, you know, just different people, different lives, different personalities. And, you know, so, but I kind of wanted to, unless you have a story that pops out or anything, I wanted to talk about Black Harvest, which is sort of your WrestleMania. As we've talked about, we promoted it and I went to it and it was great, great fun. It was good to see Hurricane Helms there and such. But what is a day of that like? Like for a big show like Black Harvest, how does your day start off?
Well, I think Black Harvest is a perfect example of how, you know, kind of the whenever you're setting an event up like that, where we did, you know, we just had our 12th anniversary. And essentially, at least whenever it comes to the Black Harvest event, I start planning for the next Black Harvest event as soon as Black Harvest ends. I'm not literally plotting out every single thing that's going to happen, but over the course of the year, the first thing I do is I try and look at like what the climate is in wrestling at the time. What is kind of becoming the fad? What's becoming popular? And then I try and kind of integrate our stuff into that because I'm always a huge proponent of putting local talent, you know, over and as opposed to just bringing in big names and having big names work big names. But yeah, I'm always kind of looking at the climate and what it's like. And then as it gets closer to the event, you know, another thing I always try and do, which wrestling used to do, but it doesn't do that much anymore, is I always try and pick a theme for the event to make, you know, that stand out from any other event, you know. So, you know, it kind of gives it that atmosphere for us now where, you know, whenever Black Harvest rolls around, you know, even if some people might not come to every single one of our events, they always come to the Black Harvest event because they know like that's the biggest event of the year that we do. So I always try and pick a theme. I don't know if you noticed this year, but I picked out horror movies because I'm a big horror movie fan.
Yeah.
So like all our production stuff, whenever we released flyers and banners, it all was themed around different horror movies. The videos were themed around horror movies. So that's kind of one of the first things I do is I look at the climate and then I pick out a theme. And then, you know, the climate helps me decide what talent I'm going to be bringing in.
Cool. How far out do you start to plan the talent? Like, like if you're trying to reach a bigger name, when do you start contacting them?
Usually at least I start 6 months before the event because usually when you're dealing with agents, you know, it takes them a little bit of time to get, you know, with the talent and then get back to you. This kind of game of going back and forth on dates, you know, and things like that can last about a month, you know. So I'm trying to plan at least 6 months before. you know, because we like to kind of break the news like 3 or 4 months before the event. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I usually try about 6 months in advance. Usually we go through an agent. This year, I'm sure you noticed, we had Shane Helms, which, you know, we went through an agent, but we also had Juventud Guerrera, which I contacted directly. And, you know, that's always kind of a risk, because when you're dealing with someone directly, then there's no middleman that can kind of take the fall, you know. You know, if something happens and they change their date, or if they just decide to not show up, then you're out, you know, which, you know, we've dealt with that before. You know, not this past Black Harvest, but the one before with Vader. So I think, you know, really, if you want to get into really how it goes, I think that one's a really good example of how a independent wrestling show can be ran, and then how things don't go right, and then how you have to, you know, weave it into something good. Because regardless, the people paid their money, and they're there, and you have to give them a good show one way or the other. And that's why I always book two talents. Because if something ever happens, and one falls out of line, or anything like that, we always have the other talent to fall back on.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, luckily, this past Black Harvest, they both showed up, and it was great. I mean, I had a great time. Me and my buddies had a great time.
It was the craziest thing because, you know, literally it was 2.5 weeks before Harvest. I knew that we were flying in Hoovy from Mexico City, and that huge earthquake struck Mexico City. Where he lives. So, like, I messaged him, and I was like, man, I really, you know, you don't want to just pop right out and say, hey, are you still going to be here?
Of course.
The first thing I said was, hey, I hope you and your family are okay. You know, hopefully I hear back from you soon. And there was like a 3-day gap there where I didn't hear anything from him. And that was very scary. You send your down payments, and, you know, also you don't want to hear about anything bad happening to, you know, a legend, because technically he is a cruiserweight legend. So that was kind of scary, but, you know, you just keep on rolling on. Luckily he got in touch with us and everything went off without a hitch. But then the day of the event, you know, their flights were delayed. So, you know, we go to the airport, especially when you're a small independent show. You know, whenever you have two people kind of doing everything, you have a ring crew, but, like, technically we need to be there at the event to set things up and make sure that everything is perfect.
Yeah.
So we were stuck at the airport, you know, for 2 hours because the flights got delayed.
Wow.
And somehow both of their flights landed within 5 minutes of each other.
That's crazy.
So they were able to ride together, which was also another really cool thing, because whenever you're meeting new talent, you never know how they're going to be. Some talent might be jet lagged and, you know, they're just not in a very good mood. But Hoovy and, you know, Helms, I guess, were buddies from back in the day, you know.
Sure.
And they started hitting it off, you know, which just in general brought about a really good atmosphere, you know. So I was really happy. But, yeah, kind of setting up for all that, you never know what to expect. So there's a lot of nerves. You know, you have to have nerves to steel whenever you go into booking big event, because anything can go wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. How long did the how early was the plane arrive from the show? Like, when did you pick
them guys
up?
Let's see. They didn't even go to their motel rooms. Let's put it that way.
Wow.
Well, I picked them up. I took them straight. That we went and I got them a bite to eat. And then we came to the event. And within 2 hours, the show was starting.
Wow. Yeah.
So I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off, essentially.
I bet. I didn't see you much that night before or after, so I knew you were busy. I knew that something I had heard rumblings around there that their flight had been delayed, but I just didn't know how long. So that's interesting to know because the airport's an hour away for people that aren't around here. About an hour from you guys, right?
Yes. I can get there comfortably within an hour.
Yeah. So it's not so. So it's a risk, you know, like because the airport's that far away, so they can't be too late. John, do you have anything that you want to mention before we go on?
Yeah, I was just, the current atmosphere of the wrestling scene is different than I ever remember it, and I'm 54 years old. There definitely seems to be some a title change something's happening because, and you're more on the ground level of it than I am and know have more experience, but while the WWE is still making hand over fist money, their ratings are down and their house show numbers are down. Less people are going to see their shows. But the indie scene seems to be growing.
Flourishing. Yeah.
Flourishing. I said, so it's not wrestling that's the problem. Obviously, because the people are going to these local shows or whatever, and these indie shows and this and the other. So I would like to get your opinion about that. What do you think is going on, or what is it that you think is malmeaning?
Well, from my perspective, and I'll just give a real quick tidbit from whenever we first started doing our Black Harvest event, for example. Our first Black Harvest event, our headliner was Chris Sabin. Okay, and there was... Mm-hmm. That was at the Pigeon Forge Armory off of a dingy back road across from the Sevier County dump, you know. And we packed that place out with, like, you know, almost 500 people. But that wasn't because of Chris Sabin. That was because of the local talent.
Right.
You know, they knew that we were doing something different and everybody kind of banded together. But, the next year we brought in Jay Lethal, you know, and then Christopher Daniels, because around that time, like 2006, 7, 8, 9, TNA Wrestling in the X Division was really popular. And on an independent level, we didn't have the connections to bring in at that time the legend. We had one agent, and he was the agent for TNA at the time. So it was Bob Ryder. And So through Bob Ryder, you could get a lot of the ROH guys. You could get a lot of the TNA guys. And those guys drew really well. And then there was like a little bit of shift, a change there whenever Hogan came to TNA and the X Division kind of fizzled out. And then a lot of those guys kind of branched off and TNA's ratings started to drop. And then WWE did an ECW reunion type thing whenever they did the one night stand. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden ECW wrestling was really popular again and people that hadn't watched it got back into it. And so we booked an event where we brought in Raven and Tommy Dreamer, you know, and right. Then we had Sabu.
Let me guess,
a few months
Tommy
later.
Lost.
Tommy Dreamer did lose, yes. Yeah. Yeah. But that shows you about how you have to keep kind of an eye on what's going on.
Right.
You know, we knew that there was a revitalization of that brand, so that's what we catered to that year. You know, and then after that, we brought in, we got really lucky and hooked up with a promoter who had a connection, and Jerry the King Lawler had just had a match on WrestleMania, so we booked Jerry the King Lawler.
There you go. Yeah.
So it was.
I'm not sure. I think he's popular in that area somehow.
He is, but being able to use footage, you know, as a promoter, you try and cut corners as much as you can.
Oh yeah.
So I was able to take footage from WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
and zoom in enough to where you couldn't see the WWE logo in the corner. And I used that footage for our Comcast commercials.
Cool.
So essentially, a fan would be watching Monday Night Raw, and then they would see a commercial for Jerry Lawler with right. WWE's product.
Mm-hmm.
So to them, they don't know whether is this a WWE event? Is this somehow connected to WWE? You try and cut corners as much as you can, because the independent scene doesn't have the same power and money behind it that a big company does. So you try your best to cut as many corners. You know, sometimes, you know, an agent will pop back and be like, hey, you can't do that. You know, you can't use Prince Puma. You have to say Ricochet,
right.
You know,
yeah.
Because Lucha Underground will sue you, you know? So, but anyways, you know, so, and then literally the next year I went to an event in Nashville and we booked Goldust for our Black Harvest event, and Goldust was booked at our event. And then 2 weeks before our event, he made his return to Monday Night Raw against Randy Orton. And he called us and said,
and he can, and he still uses the Goldust even when he's not with them, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah, he does.
I think he's got that. Yeah. He had that connection or that permission to do that. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. And the cool thing was he called us and he said, Stephanie McMahon said that it was okay if I did one last independent show. And ours was his last independent show.
Cool.
And he did Monday Night Raw on Monday. He wrestled at our event on Friday. And then at on Sunday, he wrestled on the pay-per-view event Battleground.
Wow.
So we got really lucky again.
And
you
that
know?
Was a great match, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and luck plays a huge part in it.
Oh, absolutely.
Luck plays a huge part in it. You have to be the right talent at the right time. Sometimes it's a hit and a miss, you know, and then you like the Vader deal. We booked Vader, and that ended up being a huge headache, but we had the Rock and Roll Express there also. And the Rock and Roll Express hadn't been here, like, in the Knoxville area in a long time, so the people were happy regardless. But if you ask my opinion on what the climate, on why it is the way it is, I think that wrestling fans have so much of an output now. They're able to go on the internet. They're able to watch New Japan. They're able to watch ROH. And they see the athleticism and they see what these guys are doing, where the fights are built more as a fight, you know, it's built more like a fight, and they don't throw all the cheesy gimmicky stuff in it and all the kiddie stuff. And this, I think people get tired of that. And that's why you see a lot of wrestling fans, they'll tune out of WWE for half of a year and then they'll pop back in and watch around the Rumble. You know, you watch from the Rumble leading up to Mania. And then after Mania, everybody has their opinions on whether it's good or bad, you know, and then they go back to watching, you know, whatever the product they're watching. And now, you know, you have talents that are jumping over. You have, you know, Jericho is now going to be wrestling at Wrestle Kingdom. Mm-hmm. So I think that, and then you saw Triple H was at an independent show, you know, so they're bleeding through and they're blurring the lines. I think that in time that the WWE will gain that audience back, but I think it's going to take years for the NXT product to start to bleed over to the mainstream Monday Night Raw product, you know, not necessarily in who's wrestling, but I'm saying in the presentation of it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that it's going to take time. You still have Vince McMahon behind the table on Monday Night Raw and SmackDown.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Triple H controls the NXT brand. So I think that's where the difference lies. And I think, you know, you hear a lot about them saying, you know, Vince is not very privy to what's going on outside of his own product. And you can tell that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of NXT real quick, did either one of you hear that they've announced that they're moving their TV production from Full Sail and they're actually setting up in Atlanta in the old Georgia Championship Wrestling / WCW place.
No.
Oh, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that same building that they used all those years. And, of course, you know, now with the War Games and the Starcade, it seems like to me, Tice, that Triple H is rebuilding, the old Georgia Mid-Atlantic territory.
Oh, Jonathan will be very excited to hear
great
that.
Idea. Yeah. I think that's a great idea because you still have a lot of wrestling fans there that was such a huge market when WCW was at its peak. You know, and Goldberg was fighting Hogan and all this, you know, in Atlanta. And, like, Atlanta was, like, their stomping ground. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, even before that with the Crockett's and, the War Games and Dusty and Rick and the Four Horsemen. And, you know, yeah, it was a hotbed. I mean, they basically took over the NWA, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you for your time, Isaac. I wish we could talk to you even longer. We will certainly have you back because you're one of our favorite guests.
Absolutely.
Certainly, to promote your next big show possibly. We're wanting to do a territory talk, and we definitely have to have you on to talk about Tennessee. So,
yeah, definitely. And for anyone out there that's, you know, a promoter and they're just starting out in the business, my best advice to them would be, build your local talent first, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Bring in big name talent. Like we brought in Xavier Woods one time, bring in big name talent and put your local talent over.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, the local talent is the ones that are hitting the asphalt for you. They're the ones that are selling the tickets. They're the ones that are doing all that. And if you want to bring in a big name, then just keep your ear to the ground and keep an idea on what's going on.
Great. That's great advice, Isaac. Yeah, we really appreciate it. And thank you very much for coming on and taking your time to do this.
Thank you guys for having me. And anytime I can come back, I'm glad to do it.
All right. Thank you, buddy.
Okay, let's talk about the Flopcast.
Where every week we drink a lot of coffee and we talk about comic books,
movies,
conventions,
music,
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, don't forget the coffee.
Lots of weird, obscure pop culture stuff from the 70s and 80s.
And chickens. Yeah, chickens.
This will be the stupidest half hour of your week.
We guarantee it.
You can find us on the ESO Network.
And Flopcast.net.
Hi, kids. It's me again, John Morgan Neal, your host, and Richard Buell, our producer, and my sidekick. And we are in our second interview for our independent extravaganza is a guy who's been wrestling on the scene for a while now and is a very decorated individual, former NWA North American champion, NWA Georgia champion, NWA Atlanta champion, NWA Action champion, and NWA Southern Tag Team champion, the one and only Tyson Dean, the reflection of perfection.
How are we doing tonight, guys?
We're doing just fine. Thank you for joining us, Tyson.
Yeah,
outstanding.
Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I guess the first question that we need to ask is, I noted that you just tweeted something about Mr. Tim Storm, the current NWA world champion, who we are actually interviewing tonight as well. So,
oh, good.
You have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I did. The NWA put something out saying they were looking for challengers for Tim Storm.
Mr. Lagana point out that the NWA is open for business.
That's right. Exactly right. They're open for business, and business with Tyson Dean's always good. So,
sir,
someone threw my name out there, and I just wanted to point out to the fact that the last time the champ, Mr. Tim Storm's shoulders hit the mat for a three count was by me, July 16th of last year, down near Florida, whenever I gained the NWA North American title.
Right.
I haven't been back in a ring with Tim since then. Been chasing him around for the last 2 years. So I figure it's time for us to get something done.
I couldn't agree more. That would be great.
Matter of fact, I'll be in Tim's state. Mr. Storm that December 15th, I'll be at a promotion with Tim Storm in Texoma, in Texas.
That's my hometown. That's where I'm at. I'll be
really?
There. Yes, sir. Really? So I'll look you up, shake your hand. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. That'll be cool. So
if right here in Sherman, Texas. I live in Sherman.
Maybe go out and have some drinks if Tim wants to put that 10 pounds of gold on the line and throw some hands with me again.
That would be great. That would be great. He actually won it here, as a matter of fact, here in Sherman. So.
That's right. Yeah, he did it against Jax.
Yep, sure did.
But, I mean, before, like, you know, all things said, though, to I don't think that right now the NWA could have a better champion, a guy with more class than Tim.
I completely agree. I've been discussing it on our Facebook webpage group that's associated with our podcast here. And he just comes off as classy and old school. I kind of akin to him to being sort of the Harley Race of today.
Mm-hmm.
And he just needs – that's a perfect thing for Billy to build this thing on and then bring in his Ric Flair to eventually – you know, mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I mean, he's an outstanding human being, lots of class and everything. And one thing that I was proud of to carry, aside from the fact of how much the NWA means to me, because it's what I grew up on, and I'm really excited to see what Billy's got as far as his business plan. I've been listening to some of his, watching their videos, been listening to him on Joe Rogan's podcast, and he really appreciates the heritage of the NWA, and I don't think there could be a better guy right now to carry that banner and bring it back to a prominence. But, you know, that being said, I was extremely proud to carry the North American title, and Tim set the standard for what that champion should be, and I think he's done a good job in following Jax and setting the standard for what the world champion should be.
Well, that segues perfectly to my next question, because you're talking about you grew up in the NWA, and I assume because you're based in Georgia that you grew up with Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are your memories of that? Who were your favorites? Who inspired you the most to become what you are today?
Oh, Ric Flair, right off the bat. Sure. I mean, my grandfather hated Ric Flair, and we would watch it, you know, it would be 6:05 every Saturday night. He would take my brother and I fishing all throughout the summers and everything. And those are some of the best memories I'd have of us going fishing on summer vacations. And then we would watch Orlando Wilson and Roland Martin. You'd eat dinner during those shows. And then 6:05, wrestling would come on TBS. We'd watch that for a little bit, and then you'd flip over to Superstars of Wrestling on Channel 69, and we'd usually fall asleep in front of the TV watching wrestling the rest of the night.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
So I guess I assume you've probably seen the 30 for 30.
Yeah.
It's great. Great.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it did. I mean, if growing up being a big Flair fan and everything, And watching so much of him to study him and everything. Because if you grow up watching Ric Flair, I think at some point everybody starts off trying to be Ric Flair, and then you kind of peel off into being your own thing.
To who your own thing, which is what he did. He was no different. I mean, when he first started out, he wanted to be Dusty. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
and then he turned into a little bit of superstar Billy Graham
and a little bit of Buddy Rogers. And, but then eventually he became Ric Flair. And
exactly.
And in my opinion, you know, became the greatest of all time. But So give us a little bit of your background on the indie stuff here. I know that you've obviously, like I said, I ran down some of your championships. You've been very successful at it. And to give us a little bit of what it's like to be an independent wrestler in this day and age.
It's fun. You know, you get to get out and travel a lot and meet a lot of people and everything. And I always appreciate wrestling in different regions and everything, how a crowd in Texas is going to like something different than what a crowd in Tennessee is going to like, as what's different than what a crowd in Georgia's going to like. And you can wrestle up near Atlanta and they're going to like something different than going like out to a more rural part of Georgia. It's fun. It's like the way how we teach it at the school. It's we talk about everything is like, you know, flavors of ice cream. You know, not everybody's going to like everything. I mean, you can go to a UFC fight and Some people just want to watch guys go out there and slug until one guy drops. Some people enjoy more of the chess battle of a fight, and some people enjoy the ground movement of a fight. And that's what I think is the cool thing about independent wrestling is you get that old school kind of crowd and everything where you really see different loves for it, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's a variety.
Right.
A total variety because, like you said, everybody likes something different. And there was a time there where I think that wrestling becoming a little two-note. I love to see this independent scene. It's definitely providing a lot more, even with WWE providing a flavor. So that's good to see, too.
But, yeah. Like NXT, I like what they're doing in NXT. That's got a good throwback feel to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we were just talking to Isaac Kane, you know, the guy that runs KFW, and I mentioned at the end because he mentioned NXT too that they have just announced that they're moving their offices into your neck of the woods. I mean, they're going to do their TV tapings there in Atlanta in the old building that WCW and Crockett used to use.
What, Center Stage?
Yes. Yep. That, really? They have one more taping at Full Sail. They're starting up there on the next tapings.
That's crazy. No, no. Yeah, that's crazy news. I was trying to remember Center Stage, the name of it. That's a great venue. I've been to it. I got to go to it earlier this year.
So that and the Starrcade show coming up and the War Games is coming. Come on, Daddy. You know, it's like Triple H is trying to create his own NWA over here and under WWE.
You know, and that's what I think is cool, though. I mean, you know, I think people give him a lot of flack and everything. But if anybody's going to preserve the older heritage of wrestling, I think he'd be the guy up there.
I agree 100%.
And I like, he's always been a guy that I've really enjoyed watching and everything because, I mean, if you watch him, he's a throwback. He was a mixture of Flair. Well,
a guy totally inspired by Flair. And he, to me, he's one of the few people that can still be a good old school heel. You know, he has that same mentality. And I'm a fan of Triple H. So speaking of Triple H and NXT, and Full Sail, and the Performance Center, let's talk about this school that you've got going that you're bringing in new independent wrestlers. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we've got the Good Brothers Dojo in Jenkinsburg, Georgia. It's
that Good Brother sounds familiar. What's that all about?
Well, it'd be because my partner Luke Gallows was the one that we were kicking around whenever we were doing names. We had actually kind of soft started it as the Bulletproof Dojo, and didn't start. We had to take a step back and everything. We were looking for another name and everything. We were throwing ones out there, and he threw Good Brothers, and I was like, all right, well, I want to keep Dojo. I said, like, I don't care what we put in front of it. I want Dojo.
Right.
Like, it's, to me, it's got
I like that name. That now that's equal with me to the Funking Dojo as one of the best dojos.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, it's got that good feel. Because to me, I mean, Luke's like, you know, we've been friends for several years and everything. And it's a good tribute to his time in Japan. It's got the feel of the gym. Like when we were looking at it and everybody was like talking about, oh, we need to have this nice, this, that, and the other, and do this and do that. And I was both, me and Gallows right off the bat, we were like, it's going to have, and how much language are we allowed to get into on this?
Say what you got to say.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, we want a good just get in here and whip your ass kind of feel to this place. Like, absolutely. I boxed in my teens and 20s, and like those were the gyms. Like there was a few gyms in Atlanta that they opened them up, and they were pretty and everything else. And you know, I didn't like it. I liked whenever you'd go over to Doraville or downtown, and there was just a couple of old just gyms that stunk. You got good hard work in, and you go in there and you fought. You either kick somebody's ass, or you got your ass kicked.
And the kind of gym that a good movie director would film in.
And they did.
Yeah, sure they did.
Came by and filmed some fight scenes in them. And so, I mean, that was our thing with the dojo. You know, it's a small building, but it's big enough for us to get the work in. It's got some, you know, some of our posters and some old school posters that we all had on the wall. And, it, you know, we get it, got a ring and some hard work. And so we've got some boys in there that, you know, get in there and they work really hard. And I'm loving it. And it stepped my game up because there was things that, like, having to think and teach them and has actually, it's improved me a lot. And I get a big kick and a lot of joy out of teaching the guys and seeing them learn. And when it, especially like tonight they had, last night was kind of rough. And then tonight they had that moment where, cause Luke can get his points across when he needs to and get their attention. So he had a come to Jesus talk with them last night, and you could tell tonight that it really rang true to them, and they got in there and worked hard, and it was awesome.
Good. Well, I mean, I'm glad that, because that, you know, you hear a lot about schools, and some of them are good, some of them bad, but you know, you even hear stories from some of the top guys and the schools that they joined, and there wasn't always an on hand type of thing. And it sounds like you guys are invested in this because you really want to do it, and you want to do it on a certain level, and you guys are really invested in. And helping these kids, you know.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that was right, and that was the thing, because I mean, that's the thing that is so cool about, I think, with Gallows, is he's like, right now he's at the high of levels that you can get to, but I've sat next to him in a old crappy building at the lowest of lows, also.
Right.
So he can teach him everything from, you know, work. Whatever kind of independent show,
Japan,
to Japan, yeah. To Mexico, to Africa, to, you know, back here in the States. And it's, you know, it's something that was important to us because, you know, both of us have a like mentality of leave something better than you found it. And,
well, it kind of ties into the name of the organization, because one of the things I love about the whole Good Brothers idea is that the meaning of it is the brotherhood of the boys, the wrestling people, and a very old school type of way of thinking, and I appreciate it. You know, it's one of the things that really I like most about, you know, any of the behind the scenes stuff is hearing the stories of these guys and the connection that they had that is deeper. It's like almost kind of like soldiers or people in war. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It only you guys know what it's like to be on the road and do this, and you can, you always have that connection with another guy who did it, whether you like him or not, you still have that connection.
Yeah, you get out there, you give it up, you know, you get in the ring, you give him everything you got, he gives you everything you got, and you know, you build a bond through that. And I've always really appreciated that, whether it was shoot wrestling, boxing, professional wrestling, any type of combat sport that I've ever been in, there's been a bond, you know, there where, you know, I've always loved it because team sports I did well at and everything, but there's always the thing where someone can say, well, that guy dropped a pop fly, that guy missed a pass, this guy missed a block or whatever. But, you know, whenever you're one-on-one with another individual in a ring or on a mat or anything like that, it's you and him. And, you know, you got to hold up your end of the bargain. And I've loved that. And like, especially tonight, whenever you see the boys working hard and, you know, if one dude starts falling behind and they're having to run laps and it was, you know, they'd run there and where's so-and-so? Well, he's dragging behind. Well, why in the hell am I looking at you then? And they go run back with him doing squats, doing push-ups. If one guy was missing them, all right, well, he owes me 25, and I'm doing them with him. It's not like I'm just standing there propped up in the corner.
Right.
Like, he owes me 25, so we're doing squats, or we're doing push-ups, or we're doing whatever until he finishes 25. So, you know, they all build a bond together because we're all suffering with one another.
Right. Richard, you got a question or two for Mr. Dean?
Yeah. So, you know, Ric Flair was obviously a big influence on you, but how did you go about getting into the industry?
The wrong way.
Well, that's a good lesson, though.
Yeah. I learned quick. I started wrong. So I had a buddy of mine that was promoting shows and everything, and I was coaching football. And this guy that was just, he was awful. Not my buddy, the other guy, was just terrible. And he said something about, you know, bringing the football team to a wrestling show he's on. I was like, all right, well, cool. So I did it and everything, and the boys had a good time. And then it started off as a joke of, he said, well, you know, you should get in there and wrestle. And I was like, man, I don't know how to do that. So I watched it all growing up, and I wrestled, I boxed, but I don't know how to do professional wrestling and everything. And he's like, oh, you can do it, and da da da. And so I got started, and it was awful. So, like, right away I realized, you know, all right, I need to find a trainer. And so I got with are either you guys from Georgia? I know one of you said that you're from Texas.
John's from Texas. I'm from Tennessee.
Okay. So there's a guy that wrestled here in Georgia and around the South named Crew Jones. And I caught up with him, and I really just pestered him until he he would, like, coach me some. And then NWA Atlanta was going to open a school. And so I knew that I was like, all right, well, he's heard it from me. And he said, no, if he hears it from more people, maybe he'll say, yeah, because he was really good. So anyway, so they started a school, and he trained me and everything. And then from there, you know, I've had a lot of good mentors that's helped me out along the way.
Awesome. Yeah, cool. So how long have you been wrestling? How many years?
Going into nine. Eight or nine, yeah. Somewhere.
Oh, that's great.
I lose.
I'm sure the years go by either quick or slow. I don't know. Some years
it's
probably
quick.
Bad.
Like, it feels like yesterday, and I'll lose track of them. I feel bad. There's times where I've had matches with guys that were more like name guys, and people will tell me about it, and they're like, oh, I watched you do that match with so-and-so, and I've completely forgot about it. So I was telling my wife the other day, I need to start writing this stuff down.
So, yeah, that way you can have a memoir, you know? I mean,
Yeah, because you do end up with a lot of funny stories and everything. And
oh, I bet. I listened to the Tony Schiavone podcast, and he talks about how fans are like, how do you not remember that and all this? And like, Tony's like, I don't remember anything. He said, but fans remember everything. So, I mean, that's the case. It's probably because as a fan, we rewatch stuff. So, or you know.
Well, and it's neat because you're building a memory. And there's times where somebody would tell me about a match that I had, and a spot that was really cool to them. And I've completely forgot about it. But then when they recount it to me, then I can remember it. And it's always cool to me that, you know, something I did impressed them enough or left a lasting memory with them and really entertained them.
Yeah, I bet that's awesome to hear. So do you have any shows coming up that you want to promote? Anything major going on or the school itself? How many trainers are there at that school?
Right now there's four. There's myself, Luke, Scott Ross, and Aaron Fry are the trainers down there. We're there right now on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Saturday mornings. We skip Monday and Tuesday because those are the days that Luke's traveling. Mm-hmm. And he likes to be there, you know, obviously whenever we're holding the classes and everything. And so we do Wednesday and Thursday from 5 to 8:30, and then Saturday morning from 10 to 12. Our email is goodbrothersdojo@gmail.com. And, telephone number is 770-715-6530, and you can catch us on Facebook at Good Brothers Dojo also. I'll be wrestling on Thanksgiving in Monroe, Georgia for Southern Fried Championship Wrestling. I'll be wrestling Drew Adler. He's a guy that's had some tryouts here lately with ROH, and it's gone down to I do some things. I think it evolved in Florida also. He's a really talented guy that I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him stepping up here in the next year or two. And then Saturday I'll be at November 25th, I'll be at Peach State Wrestling in Carrollton, Georgia.
So thank you, Tyson, for joining us. We'd like to have you back someday. Hope you're successful going forward and help everybody there in Atlanta go and see those shows. I will certainly be there when you're here in Texoma. So thank you very much.
Oh, cool. Thank you, guys. I appreciate being on, and I'll catch up with you in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Tyson.
We proudly present Andre the Giant and Mae Young.
Remember when I met you, that was pissed off. I should have got the other phone to come. I was off that side. There was something going on. You did something to me that I can't explain. On the close of the fatal pain, every bit of my heart. Where there's something going on. To the lover's blood, it requires a dedication.
All this love we feel needs no conversation. We ride it together. Ha ha. Making love with each other. Ha ha.
I enjoy the stream. That is what we are. No one in between. How can we be wrong? Sail away with me to another world. And we rely on each other. From one level to another.
I can't live without you if the love was gone. Everything is nothing if you got no one. And you did walk in the night, slowly losing sight of the real thing. But that won't happen to us, Andre. We got no doubt. Too deep in love and we got no way out. And the message is clear, Andre. This could be the year for the real thing. No more will you cry. Baby, I will hurt you never, probably. We started in as one, in love forever. We can ride it together. Ah! Making love with each other. Ah!
This is the stream. That is what we are. No one in between. How can we be wrong? Sail away with me to another world, and we rely on each other. From one lover to another. Sail away.
Oh, come sail away with me.
That is what we are.
No one in between.
How can we be wrong?
Sail away with me.
To another world.
And we rely on each other. One lover to another.
I enter the stream. That is what we are. No one in between. How can we be wrong? Sail away with me to another world. And we rely on each other. I'm not certain I'm very comfortable with this.
Hey, folks, once again, it's me, John Morganil, your host for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable, and it's always Richard Jewell, the one that makes sure that the ship runs on time. And we are talking to a gentleman that on October 21st, 2016, defeated Jack Stane in my hometown of Sherman, Texas, to become the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, breaking a record as the oldest champion at 51 years old at the time. He is still the NWA World Heavyweight Champion and is making history again because he is the inaugural champion under the future of the NWA, as it will be under Billy Corgan, and has just recently defended that title against Nick Aldis, known as Magnus from TNA. And congratulations on that successful defense, and welcome to the show. Thank you, Tim, for being here.
Well, John, Richard, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate you having me on the roundtable. And you know, it was maybe possibly the toughest title defense I've had in, you know, in the year plus that I've held the title. It was the man is amazing. I can't say enough about the level of his skill and his athleticism and the way his mind works. I mean, he was a true competitor, a true professional.
Great. We talked to our previous interview that'll be on the show too, is somebody you're familiar with. It's Tyson Dean, who actually defeated you for the North American Championship, and apparently he's going to be in Sherman in December. And he wanted to let us know, give you his regards.
Well, I Tyson and I have wrestled once, and I'm 0-1 against him. So
he did mention that fact and was hoping that maybe that might lead to something in Sherman, but we'll never know. So we'll see. But I will be there.
I don't know. I actually have some say on what matches happen there. So you never know. We may do it just for fun. Tyson's very, very talented, very athletic. And, I actually enjoy most of the matches that I'm in, and that one was something that I'll never forget. Not just because of the loss, just because it was very competitive, and I enjoyed being in the ring with him.
I agree with what he said, that you are the perfect guy to represent the NWA title at this time and age, and Billy couldn't have a better guy to lead into the future with this, because you have both you're new and modern, but you're old school, and you have a classiness and a gravitas to you that I think benefits whatever it is that Billy wants to build this brand to be. And he said that, I say that, and so that's a good thing. And you've got like 20 plus years in this business, and that's a lot of experience. And give us some kind of background story. I mean, tell you, how'd you get into this, and what's it been like to be in it all this time?
Well, first off, thank you, both Tyson and you, for those kind words. I appreciate that. I didn't start wrestling until, if you do the math of what you just said, that I was the oldest NWA champion, I'm still the oldest NWA champion to ever hold the title. And you said 20 plus years. And if you do the math there, I didn't start wrestling until I was 30. And it was one of those deals where I have done a lot of competitive things. I played, some college football, and just anything that was competitive, I was all in on. And as a growing up as a very young kid, I loved professional wrestling. And I feel like I've told this story before, but it's like just where I was located, it had such an impact on me. Where I was located, I grew up in basically central Arkansas, but just, this is back in the days when we didn't have a ton of channels, 12 or 13 channels, but just in what we did have, I got USWA, Memphis Wrestling in the morning.
Right.
So I got Dundee and Lawler and, Valiant and all those guys.
Yes.
In the afternoon, somewhere around 2 or 3 o'clock, I got Georgia Championship Wrestling. So I got the NWA, I got the Four Horsemen, I got Mr. Wrestling Two, I got all of those guys. And then at night, somewhere around 10 o'clock, I got World Class. So I got the Von Erichs and the Freebirds and all of that. So three times a day, even as a very young, maybe 11, 12, 13-year-old, 14, whatever, I was scheduling my days around being able to watch wrestling. And it had always I was drawn to it. You know, one of the I can remember the moment that I went, oh, I've got to do that. Where I grew up, Pine Bluff, Arkansas, Pine Bluff Convention Center, Mid-South came through a couple times a year. And, I could tell you most of the, well, not most, but some of the card. But the one that really stood out was the main event that night. And I'm, you know, I couldn't afford ringside seats, but I'm not too far up in the cheap seats. And back in those days, to me, was like the look was the perfect look for wrestling. It had what's called the kettle light, which is one light over the ring.
Yes, sir.
And all it did, the entire arena was black except for the ring.
Yes, sir.
I think that classic look is still the best.
100% so agree.
That main event that night was Andre the Giant against Ken Patera.
Holy crap.
and, you know, I don't really remember a lot about the match because I was just in awe of Andre's size. The finish of the match is Andre picked up Ken Patera for this huge body slam, and when he picked him up for the body slam, his feet hit that kettle light. And the light just started swinging back and forth, and he slammed him, pinned him, 1, 2, 3, and it just, you know, I don't know what exploded, my heart, my head, everything, and I just thought, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and after the match, it took a while, you know, I don't know, I think we guessed at what time to pick us up, and this is before cell phones and all that stuff, and I was sitting there kind of just waiting. And I kind of slid up there in the ring and stood on the second rope and raised my arms. And I thought, you know, I've got to do this someday. I didn't start till I was 30. The first call I made when I decided I think I want to try this is I called the WCW Power Plant and had a really good conversation with them, but also knew that if I even tried that, I'd have to lie about my age because they 30 was their cutoff.
Yeah.
And then the second part of that was I had a wife, two kids, house payment, two car payments, you know, and I was the vice president of a company there in right outside of Little Rock. So you're talking about a full life change if I made that commitment. And a friend of mine, we were talking about it, and a friend of mine said, you know, I saw an advertisement on TV for a local wrestling organization. He said, you know, the production of the TV show wasn't very good, but he said they advertised for a wrestling school. And I, you know, probably that very next day, once the weekend was over, I started making the contact and that's where I trained. I trained in Paris, Arkansas with a guy named Bill Ash, who absolutely as old school as you could possibly get. that's kind of where it started. And, you know, I wrestled in Arkansas. You know, Bill ran, I don't know, 2 or 3, 4 times a year. And then through his connections, he got me hooked up in Springfield, Missouri with the Harley Races promotion that had just started World League Wrestling or World Legion. It was both of those at one time. Mm-hmm. You know, I got some good matches up there, and then when I moved to Dallas, the idea was I'm going to help start training a group of guys, and I did that because I was considering these brand new guys. I was more of a veteran, but the truth is, the guy who was helping with train at that point had an entirely different style as Bill Ash. He was more, you know, cardio and drills, and his psychology was more lucha and Japanese. You know, so I had a basis in both kind of trainings, and I did, you know, it wasn't a big master plan of mine, but it sure has benefited me over the years.
No crap, no doubt. So you moved your base basically to Dallas, and you're kind of your home place because you're here in Sherman almost every month. So how did that all come about?
When I moved here, I guess I was probably, I'm just going to guess, what's been 17 years. So I was early 40s, and I got a job, a better job at a vice president of a bigger company. And I remember at that time thinking, you know, it's probably time to hang up the wrestling dream and be a big boy, you know, make some money, work 80 hours a week and do all those things. And that was going to be, that's actually, you know, kind of what my plan was. And for the first 8 or 9 months, I didn't wrestle here at all. Just because of financial reasons, I only had that job for about 9 months. And just as I was getting out of that situation, I got involved with a group called the Christian Wrestling Federation, and I jumped right back into wrestling, and I did it full time for a couple of years. And, I basically lived off the savings I had with the other jobs, did that for a couple of years, got involved with a great promotion through that was in Arlington, Texas at the time that had some local TV called PCW, Professional Championship Wrestling.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which talent-wise and production-wise was fantastic. I mean, still, I look back at those guys, and for the next 10 years, every card that I would be on, somebody from that, we'd look around the locker room, and the, you know, the top guys in that locker room would be from that show.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of led to me meeting Robert Langdon, and Robert walked up to me, and he said, the way he approached it, he didn't know it at the time, but he used absolutely the perfect approach. He came up, and I had long hair at the time, but I'd shaved my mustache off and all that stuff. And he came up and he goes, you know, he said, I don't know if we haven't met before. I've heard about you. He said, I run a show in Sherman and Ardmore. And he said, I want you to be my Kerry Von Erich. You talk about hitting the cash register with me, not money wise, but
yes.
Emotionally, I just went, oh yeah, yeah, I want to be that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that's been, I don't know. I mean, Robert could probably tell you, but that has to have been 6 or 7 years ago. And I think I've missed a total of, you know, that's my home base. Mm-hmm. I do some behind the scenes stuff there. I do some booking and some different stuff there with right. James Beard. And I think I've missed a total of 2 shows in the entire time. And you know, I've got a third one coming up because of a title defense, but in 6 or 7 years, I think I've missed 2 shows up there, and it's once a month.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I've been there for a lot of them.
Yeah.
So,
yes, yeah.
Well, that's a perfect segue because I noted that you've taken the claw as a major hold of yours. So I guess all ties in.
and that's why, you know, I mean, growing up a Von Erich fan, as any, you know, and again, I was in Arkansas, but as everybody in Texas was during that time period,
yes,
you know where they were from, Denton County, and
yes, sir.
You know, it just fit. And you know, the funny thing is, I would love to use it everywhere, but it gets the best response in Sherman, and you know, for all the different places that I wrestle, and you know, it makes me smile inside when I use it because that brings back great memories and. I'd love to use it everywhere. It just, you know, a lot of places don't respond to it. So I usually give it a little test in the middle of a match and see how the crowd responds. And if they respond, we go with it. If they don't, then we move on. So,
yes, sir. I bet you'd get a big response in Japan. Have you ever been to Japan?
I went to Japan. I did a title defense this year in February.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And I did not use the claw. It didn't fit with the guy that I was wrestling was named Hama, H-A-M-A.
Oh, right.
And he was former sumo, former MMA, and had wrestled for, I guess, Noah and All Japan.
Right.
And he was, I think, 5'10", 480-something pounds, and, I mean, legitimate sumo wrestler. So, you know, the claw did not seem to be an effective weapon against him. There were very little, to be honest, there was very little effective weapons against a guy that size. The main thing that got his attention was a stiff right hand to the face early in the match, and that kind of set the tone. So
right.
So
Richard, you got a question for the champ?
Yeah, I was just wondering, what was your reaction to when you heard that Billy Corgan was taken over in WA?
Good question.
You know, because the old ownership and the new ownership had signed a no disclosure contract. Nobody knew what was going on. Nobody, and I learned about it just like everybody else. I think William Corgan released a press conference. I mean, a press release, and it was the day that a lot of the guys were going up to the Cauliflower Alley convention, and I saw it on Facebook just like everybody else, and my phone immediately lit up from I don't know how many dozens and dozens of guys saying, is this true? Is that really happening? Is that a rumor? And the truth is, I just didn't know. I didn't know what was happening. So going into it, for me, it was just a big question mark. I try to approach life and the business as professional as I can. And so my approach to that was, well, let's just see what happens. And I had no expectations one way or the other. You know, I didn't know if it would be, well, thanks for your service. You know, we wish you the best. Or if it would be, you know, I'll tell you what I didn't expect, to be honest with you, is where we're at right now. You know, I didn't, I didn't know if they would, how they would want, or if they would want a 52-year-old world champion to, you know, be the guy that starts them off on the new journey. But, you know, the big thing with me has been, and this is just my, I mean, I love the NWA. I'm passionate about the NWA. I've dedicated myself to the NWA for the past 5 or 6 years. And you know, it's been my primary objective in my promotion. So it's been, the thing I looked at was Dave Lagana and William Corrigan are the two guys that basically are making the decisions. As I watched things developed, my concern was, do they have a love and a passion for the history and the legacy of the NWA? And they do. And if, and I'm sure everybody knows the story with Billy Corrigan, with TNA, how that went. And for somebody to go through the, I don't know a better word, the crap that he went through, putting over, you know, $2 million in and then basically getting fired and having to sue to get the money. I mean, all of the stuff that he went through, to go through that and still love and be passionate about the wrestling business enough to want to get back into it tells you how much he loves wrestling. So they love the history and they love professional wrestling.
Go ahead, Rich.
Were you when did you find out, how long after did you find out that they were going to keep you as the champion? Because a lot of people were wondering if they were going to strip you of the title or anything like that.
I didn't really know. I can't remember the exact month, but I know it was probably May when they announced the purchase. I don't know when it went into effect, but I know that as of October 1st is when they basically started doing things. And sometime a little bit before that, they started visiting the different affiliates out there. And I, through just word of mouth, Dave Lagana is going to be at, I think it was Dyersburg, Tennessee at NWA Mid-South. And I got to talk to him real briefly. He watched the match. He talked to me and, you know, I guess whatever they saw, they were okay with. And then, you know, we talked a little bit and really it really came down to building trust. And we built the trust in each other enough that I knew he wasn't going to leave me wrong and I wasn't going to leave him wrong. And it's just kind of gone from there. And I think that, I don't know if you guys have watched any of the 10 pounds of gold.
I have. That's been great. And, great stuff.
Yeah. Yes. And look, Dave Lagana is a lot of the creative behind that with, you know, Mr. Corrigan's input and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, for those guys, I legitimately opened up three areas of my life that I have protected for 20 years. And that wasn't easy to do. I mean, I'm old school as you can be, because that's the way I was trained. And, you know, the three areas that I protected is I didn't want anybody in the world to know my age. Right. Because I didn't want that to be an issue. I didn't want anybody in the world to know what I did for a living. I'm a school teacher. You don't want to put that out there. You want to keep the curtain up there. I'm a professional wrestler. And then the third thing is I wanted to protect my family. And, I didn't bring my family around because that was nobody's business. And I've opened all that up to them. And there's been for the most part, there's been a good reaction. There was a huge reaction, great reaction after the 10 pounds of gold episodes, because they really projected me and I want to say in a good light, but they, you know, the way they put the videos together was just great. So, you know, you're right. I didn't know what to expect and I never expected to be this much fun. And, there's some not so much fun stuff that goes with it, but, for the most part, it's been incredible.
Well, I think that they saw what I see and what Tyson was talking about and several other people I've talked to, you're just that perfect thing for them to have now. I mean, you have this old school classiness to you. In a very basic way, I've compared you to Harley Race there.
I'm a huge Harley Race fan. So that's,
you're kind of the Harley Race of this situation. And, you know, I guess, that's a good place to start and for Billy to find his Ric Flair at one point eventually. So,
yeah. The way I'm going into it is I cared about the NWA under the old ownership. I care about it under the new ownership and whatever my role is, if I can help, if I can be the guy that helps jumpstart wherever the NWA is going to go and grow. I just want to do that, whatever that means.
And that's part of why I'm sure that they're with you too, because I know that you have that professionalism and that class. And like I said, you look great. You have a modern look. Even you may be 51 years old, but you do not look 51 years old. Trust me, I'm actually, you're 54 right now, aren't you? But neither here nor there. I know we're the same age, basically. And my friend Ray always, you know, teases me about how come you don't look like he does.
I am 50. I'm 53, okay. And I will be 50. I'll be 54 in a couple of months. So right. That's where I'm at. And regardless of how I look, I tell you, man, you know, 20 plus years of wrestling has taken its toll. And whether I look or not, I'm feeling it. There's some nights when I'm feeling it.
But I mean, the thing is, though, is the presentation is everything. And you come off as class, you come off, you're good in the ring, you're big, you're strong, you have a good look that's good for modern wrestling, but you have the old school vibe to you, and that's the perfect thing to sell the NWA on, as the part of the tradition, but going forward to the future. Pun intended, it's the perfect storm.
Well done.
Now, one last question I have to bring up before we leave you. What was it like to step in the ring against Jerry the King Lawler?
It was interesting. You know, obviously, I don't know how, and I know he doesn't particularly like to talk about his age either, but he's in great shape. He looks fat. It doesn't seem to me like he looks much different than he did 20 years ago or 30 years ago, in the middle of the match out of nowhere, he hit me with a drop kick. He's still very athletic it's a weird balance in this business that you have to be able to draw a line, psychologically, between being a fan and when you're in the ring with somebody. Cause if you become a fan of somebody in the ring, you're not a wrestler anymore. You're a fan. So I definitely appreciate and respect everything he's done. I mean, he's done everything in this business. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. He cut a promo on me that said that he'd won 168 different world titles. And he says, according to in his promo, he said, you go to Wikipedia, he said he's held more world titles than in the world. Well, you take all those things together and say, you know, there's very few people who have done more than that. So to be able to step on the ring with that guy and then say that you came out on top is an honor and it's a privilege. So it was definitely all of those things, you know. And, you know, who knows? You know, one of these days whenever that is, when I'm done, that may be a story that I tell people. You know, as it is right now, I'm glad I got the opportunity. I'm glad that it was a world title defense, and I'm glad when we were done that I'm still world champion.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we might have lost John there. He's been having some audio problems all night. But I'd like to ask you, I feel like in 2018 is going to be a huge year for you and the NWA. So what do you have coming up that you'd like to promote?
Well, I've got tomorrow, actually. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, and I've got a title defense for a very, very big promotion there. There's a lot of incredibly talented people on the card, so I've got a title defense tomorrow in Nashville. I'm going to be – I can't say where, but I'm going to be in Philadelphia on Saturday. There are a lot of really, really exciting opportunities coming up. And kind of where I'm at is every day when I wake up as the NWA world champion, it seems like Christmas to me. I mean, I love, you know, it's a gift that I love opening, and I wake up excited every day. And it's one of those deals where I don't know how much longer I have in the business. And I'm not predicting anything. I just know that at 53, my body is telling me that, you know, I don't know how much gas I have left in the tank. So I'm going to fight hard and work hard and do all the things that I need to do to try to maintain the championship. And then if and when I everybody gets beat, if and when that happens, then I'll reevaluate, just kind of see what's next.
Well, awesome. Tim, I'd like to thank you for coming on the podcast, and we look forward to seeing you in the future. And I know John's a huge fan, and he'll be at an event in December, so I'm sure he'll try to find you and look you up.
Fantastic, man. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
Bum da da dum bum 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 b
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.